Sesa Sunyavadi Paskatya Desatarane Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatam Bitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Bitamscha Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavana Evyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It's January 1st, 2016. Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 3, Chapter 9, Brahma's Prayers for the Creative Energy, one of my favorite chapters in the Bhagavatam. Text 2. Rupam yade tarava bodhara sodayena.
Rupam yade tarava bodhara sodayena.
Shasman nivritta tamasa sadanugrahaya adogrihitam avatara shatika bijam yana bipadma bhavanadaham avirasam.
Rupam, form, yat, which, etat, that, avabodha rasa, of your internal potency. Udayena, with the manifestation, Shashvat, forever, Nivritta, freed from, Tamasaha, material contamination, Sat Anugrahaya, for the sake of the devotees, Adau, original and the creative energy of matter, Grihitam, accepted, Avatara, of incarnations, Shata Eka Bijam, the root cause of hundreds, Yat, that which, Nabi Padma, the navel lotus flower, Bhavanat, from the home, Aham, myself, Avira Sam, generated.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The form which I see is eternally free from material contamination and has advented to show mercy to the devotees as a manifestation of internal potency. This incarnation is the origin of many other incarnations, and I am born from the lotus flower grown from your navel home. Purport. The three deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar, Shiva, the executive heads of the three modes of material nature, passion, goodness, and ignorance, are all generated from Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who is described herein by Brahma. From the Kshiradakshay Vishnu, many Vishnu incarnations expand at different ages in the duration of the cosmic manifestation. They are expanded only for the transcendental happiness of the pure devotees. The incarnations of Vishnu who appear at different ages and times are never to be compared to the conditioned souls. The Vishnu tattvas are not to be compared to deities like Brahma and Shiva, nor are they on the same level. Anyone who compares them is called a pashandi, or infidel. Tamasa, mentioned herein, is the material nature, and the spiritual nature has a completely separate existence from tamaha. Therefore, spiritual nature is called avabodha rasa, or avarodha rasa. Avarodha means, quote, that which completely nullifies, unquote. In the transcendence, there is no chance of material contact by any means. Brahma is the first living being, and therefore he mentions his birth from the lotus flower, generated from the abdomen of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Rupam yadeta ravabodha rasodayena shasvan nivritta tamasa sadanugrahaya adogrihitam avatara Shatai kabijam yanna bipadma bhavanadahama virasam. The form which I see is eternally freed from material contamination and has advented to show mercy to the devotees as a manifestation of internal potency. This incarnation is the origin of many other incarnations, and I am born from the lotus flower grown from your navel home. So here for the sake of the devotees, sat-anugrahaya, which Prabhupada says, expanded only for the transcendental happiness of the pure devotees. So the Lord comes because he's attracted by the devotees who, in one sense, control the uncontrollable, who conquer the unconquerable. Right? Krishna is called unconquerable, achyuta. But when Arjuna uses this word achyuta, unconquerable, in the Bhagavad Gita, the acharyas comment that this means the Lord never fails to please his devotees. So generally in this world, anyone who's not an atheist, they're trying to control and attract God. They're trying to get God to be their order supplier. Right? They have their list of what they want and how they want it and when they want it, and they supply that to God and they ask God to fulfill it. And they're hoping that they can attract the attention of God with their rituals, with their prayers, with their pious deeds, and then they're hoping they can control God and he will do what they want. Of course, ironically, that's sort of the root cause of our material entanglement. At the same time, those who are pure devotees, who have no desire to control God in that sense, they get to control God. They get to control God. And this is how do we do this? Prabhupada would talk about this, saying that most of the religions of the world, they're talking about God as the Father. They're aspiring, you know, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. So that's nice. It's certainly nice to see God as the Father. We have no complaints. Better to be a theist seeing God as the Father. But Prabhupada said our aspiration is to have God as our Son. In other words, our aspiration is to have an intimate relationship with Krishna where we are trying to please him, not thinking about him trying to please us. So how do we control and attract God? We're going to look at four Sanskrit phrases in this verse. We're going to look at first said, nivritta tamaha, which Prabhupada refers to in the purport, free from ignorance. Then we're going to look at avabodha or avarodha rasa, that he's appearing by his internal potency. Then sat anugrahaya, that he's coming to please the devotees, or as Prabhupada says in the purport, just for the transcendental happiness of the pure devotees. And then finally we're going to look at shata eka bijam. Shata means many thousands, eka is one, bijam means seed, that Lord Brahma is talking to Garbhadakshay Vishnu as the seed of many thousands of incarnations. Avatara shata eka bijam, you are the seed of many thousands of incarnations. And after looking at these four phrases, we should know how to control and attract God. So nivritta tamaha, free of ignorance. So what do we mean by ignorance? What does this mean? Of course, in English, the word ignorance is very much connected to the word ignore, not to pay attention to, not to know about something. When I was a little girl, my father would frequently distinguish between intelligence and knowledge, or stupidity and ignorance, and he would say, your degree of stupidity or intelligence is genetic, but your degree of knowledge and ignorance depends on your effort. So when we talk here about ignorance, we mean someone who's bahirmukha, they're ignoring God, they've turned their face away from God, they've turned their face away from the truth. Like the owls who hide in the daytime, they don't want to see the sun. And the manifestations of ignorance of which the Lord is completely free, and it's so important to understand this because many, many times we think that the Lord, being a living entity, is also a living entity like us. So, nitya nityanam, chaitana chaitananam. So he is chaitana, he is a living being. So we might think he's a living being like us, which Prabhupada refers to in the purport. Those who think that the Lord is a living being like us, or maybe a powerful living being like Brahma or Shiva. But a conditioned living being who's in ignorance, more or less, you know, the bugs, the scorpions, the spiders, the snakes, plants, they're in deep ignorance, and the great demigods, they're in very fine ignorance, very, very small ignorance. But everyone whose condition is in ignorance, as Prabhupada said, whether you steal a diamond or a cucumber, you're still a thief. So ignorance means, again, falsity, not truth. cheating. Cheating means I appear to be one thing, and actually I am something else. So a falsity in cheating, I appear to be your benefactor, I appear to love you, I appear to care about you, I appear to be a good person, and actually I'm something else. And in psychology, they call this an imposter syndrome. And evidently, according to modern psychology, everyone has this imposter syndrome to some extent. You know, that we all feel ourselves to be an imposter. We're presenting ourselves, oh, I'm very learned in this area, I'm very competent in this area, I'm very expert, I'm very good at this, and etc. And in our heart, we know that it's not really true. Okay? We know it's not really true. We know that our real motives, our real behavior is something else. As Prabhupada said, you know, a person may appear to be a very great devotee, but privately or inwardly, they're still under the modes of nature. They're still a puppet of the modes. So this is cheating. Right? When it comes down to it, all we have is our own self-interest. And such can be seen as soon as our self-interest is threatened enough. As soon as it's threatened enough, then our real motives become apparent. Right? I'm rereading a book that I was given to read in graduate school called The Cheating Culture. And in a section about very religious people, all of them in this book, Christians, people who headed religious institutions and read the Bible regularly and preached Christianity regularly. But when it came to money, they were not honest. They had a whole different set of ethical principles when it came to money. And the author's making a point that if it's very hard to get money and you think things are unfair and so forth, no matter what your moral principles, you're still going to cheat about money. So this is the cheating falsity. And it's based, of course, on pride, which is another kind of cheating and falsity. I am great. I am the center of the universe. I am the most important. My needs are most important. You know, what's fair is that I get the most. What's fair is that I get to the front of the line and so forth. Fairness is seen in terms of facilitating me, or if I want to seem more unselfish, my group, and exploiting others. So this falsity means I'm the center, I'm the most important, and therefore you are meant to serve me, you are meant to respect and honor me, you are meant to please me, and I will please you and respect you only if it's part of an exchange where you're doing the same for me. So, and then we manipulate others. You know, if we're really in the mode of ignorance, we just take out a gun and we say, you know, serve me and please me. You know, we threaten, we try to use power. And if we're a little bit more advanced, if we're more in the modes of passion or the mode of goodness, then we manipulate others. We learn all kinds of techniques. The world is full of these techniques from the beginning of time of how to flatter people or give gifts to people or, you know, word our language and our behavior in such a way that we're going to manipulate others to do what we want. And it looks like we're serving them and we're only serving ourselves. Prabhupada would say so many times, you know, we think we're the master, but we're just serving our senses. And of course, we're not even serving ourselves. We're serving the body and the mind. We're serving the false self. So that's tamaha. And Krishna is completely, all of Krishna's incarnations are completely free of this tamaha. Nivritta tamaha. There's nothing like that. Krishna doesn't have some kind of false pride. He doesn't think he's something that he's not. Krishna isn't cheating. Of course, in his lila, there's some playful, you know, Krishna lies about whether there's dirt in his mouth and so forth. But it's all very playful. There's not any kind of gross cheating or falsity on that platform. Krishna isn't exploiting anyone. And it's so important to understand this, because a lot of our reasons not to surrender to Krishna is we think like this. We think that everyone in the world is like us. Right? This is the general tendency. We view others the way we see ourselves. This is the primary reason why we are most apt to see faults in others that we have in ourselves, which is why often in arguments or accusations, you know, someone says, well, hey, you're being bossy. Well, you're also bossy. I was once visiting a family where their one of the most frequent interchanges was, you're being very rude. Well, you're also rude. Well, you're also rude. And it was going back and forth like that. So if we're very rude, then we tend to see the rudeness in others. If we're bossy, we tend to see the bossiness in others. So because we know that we're imposters, we know on a deep level that we're cheaters and manipulators and so forth, we assume that Krishna is also like that. Right? We think like that. But he's not. And we think, why should I surrender to him? He's also a false, cheating exploiter, and he'll simply use me for his own purposes, you know, and therefore we don't surrender. But no, Krishna has none of that. He's not a cheater. Then avabodha or avarodha rasa, he's coming from the internal potency. So internal potency is just the opposite of this tamaha. The internal potency is love, and the internal potency is I work to please others. What does it mean to love? What do we mean by that? So the psychologists have analyzed love in three categories. I find the other fascinating, I value the other, and I would give anything to the other. So the first two may not be they're necessary, but they're not sufficient. In other words, if I find someone or something fascinating and I think it's important, I may still have a mood of exploitation. But if I'm willing to give everything to the person whom I find fascinating and important, then that makes it love. That makes it love. So I can say to them, you know, I have your back. I mean, it seems kind of funny because Krishna is the shelter of everyone. We are all meant to surrender to Krishna. But we also we don't just say to Krishna, I know you have my back. I know that you're my shelter. But we also say to Krishna, you can depend on me. Such is one of the main principles of taking vows of being a disciple, of going through the diksha process. It's basically saying to Krishna, you can depend on me. I'm there for you. Right? I like to tell the story of a friend of mine, and a friend, truly, in many senses of the word, who always would tell me, you know, I'm there for you, I'm there for you. And one day, I had an important doctor's appointment, and my car broke down that morning. So I called her and said, you know, I have this appointment, and my car broke down, can you give me a ride? And she said, oh, today's my day off, this is the day I take it easy, I don't want to go anywhere. And I thought, oh, okay, you know, you're not really there for me. It just because it would be mildly inconvenient for you. So, you know, I'm in need, and it's a mild inconvenience, and you're not going to be there for me. And this is, I think, the greatest heartbreak for us conditioned souls when somebody in the world says, I'm going to be there for you, I have your back, you can depend on me. And then when we need them, they're not there. You know, they're not there. So this is what we need to say to Krishna. This is real love for Krishna. So Krishna also has this under the internal potency. This is his mood for us. Interestingly enough, you know, again, we focus on our love for him, but here, this is Krishna's love for us. He finds us fascinating. It's not just that we find him fascinating. He finds us fascinating. He's intrigued by us. You know, we have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's intrigued by Srimati Radharani. Krishna is intrigued by Radharani. You know, what is she feeling? What are the qualities in me that she's finding happy? You know, happiness in. What are her own qualities? And what is her experience of serving me? And it's not only that Krishna is fascinated by Radharani; he doesn't care about anybody else. But Krishna is fascinated by each living entity. And he values us. He thinks we're important, which is pretty amazing also, because from a objective point of view, none of us have any importance at all. So, when we die, the world goes on just fine without us. And we really don't have any importance. You know, we may be missed emotionally by some people for some time, but still everything moves on. The earth keeps turning and so forth. We really have no importance whatsoever on a material level. But Krishna thinks that we're very important. He values each of us. Krishna is willing to incarnate simply to save one devotee. Right? So this is the potency under which Krishna is working. He's working under his internal potency, that of being fascinated by and valuing and giving shelter to every single living entity. This is love he's giving to us, and he's not thinking of getting something in return. You could say, well, Krishna says, Sarva Dharmam Parichaya Mame Kam Sharanam Vraja. Krishna says, Man Mana Bhava Mad Bhakto. Krishna says, you know, serve me, offer obeisances to me. It sounds like he's looking for something in return. It sounds like that's his motive. But it's not. It's not. It's just like if the stomach says to the hand, please put food in the mouth. So that's not, its stomach is not just thinking of its own happiness. The stomach is thinking of the happiness of the hand. So when Krishna is saying, just surrender unto me, he is the Paramatma. He is the self of the self. He is the self of the self. We are part of him. So it's really our ultimate self-interest that Krishna is urging us to go to when he's saying this. Then sat anugrahaya. So Krishna is trying to please the devotees. And of course, such is an expansion of this avabodha or avarodha rasa, of just giving pleasure to the other. So, but Krishna is not, you know, avabodha or avarodha rasa is in a general way, that rather than being exploitive and taking, there's a mood of giving and loving the other. But here, sadanugrahaya is very specific to please the devotees, because each jiva has a very specific way in which they want to be pleased. That's the meaning of individuality. Even our material individuality is like that. One person loves potatoes and another person hates potatoes. One person loves purple, another person hates purple. You know, one person loves climbing mountains and somebody else doesn't even want to look at the mountains. So we have, and all varieties in between. What pleases one doesn't please another. You know, we all have experience of getting a gift that the person giving to us thought would please us because it would please them. It doesn't please us at all. I'm like, why did you give us this? This is our common experience. So such is true also on a different level of the individuality of the jiva. Now you can say, well, Prabhupada talks about the oneness, that Arjuna has a oneness with Krishna, where his mind becomes one with Krishna. I was just reading this later on in the third canto, in the section on Lord Kapiladeva, when Lord Kapiladeva is talking about meditation and achieving oneness, and Prabhupada says this is when one's mind and the mind of the Lord become identical. And we might think, well, that means we all become kind of robots and we're all doing the same thing. But no, because the mind of the Lord is unlimited and includes all the living entities. Our mind becoming identical with the mind of the Lord simply means that we are going for our real self-interest. We are looking for pleasure in a way that will please the Lord. So what pleases us, this is very interesting and important, what pleases us is a specific way of pleasing the Lord. In our pure state, that's what pleases us. So in our conditioned state, what pleases us is a particular combination of the modes of material nature. So each of us is attracted to a very specific combination of the modes of material nature. And anything that's any food or music or art or geographical places, etc., etc., that are within that spectrum, we find pleasing. And anything out of that spectrum, we find displeasing. And we accept and reject according to that combination of the modes. And we try to find associates. Of course, we're not going to find an associate who has exactly the same modes of material nature, but we try to find associates who have something close, who are influenced by modes of material nature that are very similar to ours, and then we enjoy the same things together. So, but that's all about us. First of all, it's not us, the real us. Whereas in spirituality, it's not the particular flavor of how I want to please myself, it's the particular flavor of how I want to please Krishna. So Krishna has an unlimited variety of ways in which he is pleased. The only thing that displeases Krishna is selfishness and exploitation and tamaha. But otherwise, there's infinite variety of ways to please him. And each jiva is attracted to some one of those ways in particular. So when we have oneness of the mind of the jiva with the mind of the Lord, then we connect with one of those ways in which the Lord wishes to be pleased. And we make that ours. Now, you could think of it something like, okay, it's so-and-so's birthday or anniversary or something, and there's going to be a party. And every person attending the party is going to bring one food preparation. And let's say the person makes a list. These are all the foods that I like. They make a list of 100 foods, and there's 100 attendees. And each attendee chooses one of those foods that the person likes that they also want to make. Oh, I would like to make this. And the person says, oh, I really like urad dal kachoris. And, oh, I like to make urad dal kachoris. So something like that. So Krishna has this unlimited list. This is what I like. And each jiva is eternally attracted to one of those. Oh, I like to please Krishna in this way. And Krishna is wanting to please the devotees. Sad anugrahaya. Krishna wants to please the devotees in the way that they want to please them. So it's reciprocal. You know, the devotee is looking at some way Krishna wants to be pleased and saying, I want to please the Lord in that way. And Krishna is looking at what is the natural inclination of the jiva. I want to please you in this way. And Krishna can, oh, okay, you can please me in that way. And then Krishna takes the form of the way the devotee wants to please him. So Krishna is reciprocating. Yayatamam papajante tamsa jaya bhajamyaham. Krishna is reciprocating with that desire to the degree that that desire exists. So there are pure devotees in the spiritual world who don't have 100% that desire, who have some desire also for their own separate enjoyment. But it's not envious. The difference between that and the living entity here is it's not envious. And so they have. And then there are those who have ultimate, we say up to Srimati Radharani, who says the ultimate, absolutely no desire for her own pleasure. Everything is just Krishna's pleasure. So Krishna's reciprocating to that degree, to the degree we only want to please him, to that degree he manifests a particular form and relationship. And then the kind. You know, do we want to please him as in the mood of a servant, of a friend, of a parent, of a wife, of a lover? And then the particular flavor within that kind. So within that kind, there's many different flavors. There's ultimately as many subcategories as there are jivas in that staiba. So Krishna is wanting to please the devotee. Okay, you want to serve me in this way, to this extent, this kind, this flavor. So I will reciprocate with you. And therefore we come to the fourth one, shata eka bijam, shata thousands of incarnations. So really unlimited. It's described the Lord has as many incarnations as there's waves in the ocean. And for those of us who live near oceans or who've spent time near oceans, how can you count the waves in an ocean? Even to count the waves at one little beach is very difficult. We'll just speak of the waves in the ocean and all the oceans of the world. So an unlimited amount of avataras. And each avatar is dealing with the specifics. Even you have, you know, Krishna is expanding to as many gopis as there are. Each gopi is thinking, oh, Krishna is sitting on my chadar on the sandy bank of the Yamuna. Each wife is thinking, Krishna is only in my house. Each cowherd boy is thinking, Krishna is only looking at me. And Krishna expands to be the child of each of the older, not that they're old, Prabhupada used the word elderly, but they're not old. Of course, everyone's young, but the older, the adult members of the community, he expands to be the child of each of them. And Krishna expands to be the calf of every cow. He's touching every blade of grass. And each of these expansions is exhibiting a slightly different mood to reciprocate perfectly. We were just studying this in Bhaktivinoda Thakura's commentary on Manushiksha text 3, where he quotes from the Ujjwala Nilamani. And he's quoting from a section there that has to do with something called Samartharati. So there are, Ujjwala Nilamani is an expansion of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, particularly dealing with Sringara Rasa or Madhurya Rasa. And in this particular section being quoted by the Thakur, Rupa Goswami is dealing with the kind of love that Kubja has, that the Dwarka queens have, and that the gopis have. And the gopis have a kind of love called Samartharati. Artha, of course, means one's goal. Sama means the same. They have the same goal. And it's explained by Rupa Goswami himself and by Jiva Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur that, again, love means I only care about the happiness of the beloved. He said, but these the consorts of the Lord who love the Lord, certainly they experience happiness by contact with the Lord. When the Lord looks at them, touches them, etc., they feel some happiness. How can they not have any desire for that happiness? And Jiva Goswami says, yes, that's a very difficult desire to give up, to want the happiness of the touch of the Lord, of the glance of the Lord. But that becomes samartha. It achieves oneness, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also says. The happiness that one feels in the company of the Lord becomes one with one's love for the Lord. There becomes no separation between one's own happiness and the happiness of the Lord. And this degree and kind of love, which is seen to some extent in all the residents of Vrindavan, not only in the gopis, is only achieved with Krishna, Akila Rasamrita Murti. So all these incarnations, of course, it's interesting here that Brahma is addressing Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and he's calling him Avatara Shata Eka Bijam, you are the seed of thousands of incarnations. However, it's already been stated in the Bhagavatam that Krishna, that Krishna is the source of all incarnations. Krishna is two Bhagavan Swayam. That Krishna is the ultimate seed, the ultimate root of all incarnations. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Mata Paratiram Nanyat, there is no truth higher than me. So why? Because in the form of Krishna, Akila Rasamrita Murti, all rasas are possible. And in the form of Krishna, Krishna is reciprocating with this samartharati, with this love, that any personal enjoyment is part of love. What does that mean? It means I experience personal enjoyment as an expression of my desire to give you enjoyment. And we can get a very simple material example. If I buy a gift for someone, I want to see that they enjoy it. I want to see that they use it. I want to see that they enjoy it. You know, when I travel with some special saris that I get in Chennai or Mumbai. They're very cheap, only about 400 or 500 rupees each. But they're a special kind of cotton that doesn't wrinkle and dries very fast and resists stains. It's just wonderful saris. They're not very pretty, but they're very utilitarian for travel. But as I travel, it's not uncommon for someone to give me a gift of a sari, and they've never have I gotten a gift of a sari that is actually appropriate for travel. And, you know, if I say to the person, I'm sorry, I can't wear this on my travel, many times they'll say, well, I'd like to see you wear it at least once while you're here. They want to see that I'm using it and I'm enjoying it, right? If I just immediately give it away, then they're disappointed. So my happiness at the gift is part of their happiness, and often I'll wear the sari for a day simply to make them happy. So this is the samartharati, again, particularly of the gopis, but of all the residents of Vrindavan, that their happiness at Krishna is to give him happiness. It's one with giving him happiness. It's not something separate. So this is the ultimate form of Krishna. So when Brahma is saying, Avatara Shata Eka Bijam, you're the source of many thousands of incarnations, he's not saying that Garbhadakshay Vishnu is the avatari. It's simply that the incarnations in the world, and Prabhupada talks about Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwar, are coming from Garbhadakshay Vishnu. So looking at these aspects of the verse, that the Lord is free from exploitation, he's Nivritta Tama, he's free from any selfishness and pride, Avarodha rasa, rather he's coming from the internal energy, which is an energy of love, sadanugrahaya, and this energy of love is in wanting to please the devotees. There's this reciprocation, and shata eka bijam, in order to please the devotees, he's manifesting so many different unlimited avatars, up to the avatari of Krishna, so that every devotee feels fully satisfied. The devotee is making Krishna fully satisfied. Krishna makes the devotee fully satisfied. And to whatever extent we have this samartharati, to whatever extent we have a love, where our own happiness is part of that love, where there's no separate interest between ourselves and the Lord. To that extent, we can control and attract Krishna. I mean, frankly, even residents of Vaikuntha who want the four kinds of liberation and who want to enjoy the opulences of the Lord, even they control and attract the Lord to some extent. And they're living in the Lord's kingdom. There's some extent to which Krishna is facilitating them in a world of desire trees. But all the way to the highest realm of Goloka, where Krishna is so much under the control of the devotees, right, that the mothers and fathers, they're saying to Krishna, as Prabhupada says, the elderly gopis and gopas, you dance and we'll give you a sweet, and Krishna dances. Krishna dances. Or, you know, Radha's friends say, you can't visit Radha now, she's angry, and Krishna is bringing them gifts and falling at their feet, and he's coming under their control. And Prabhupada says the devotee then carries the Lord in his hand or in his pocket. But that is out of love. That is out of love. You know, the little child looks up with these big puppy dog eyes at the parents. And, oh, please, you know. And the parent, out of affection, is controlled by the two-year-old child, by the one-year-old child. It's not that the one-year-old child is controlling the parent out of some sort of a threat, or in any sort of power way, or in any sort of objective way. The control is a subjective control out of love. And of course, the devotee who controls the Lord out of love never uses the Lord for their own purposes. Indeed, the way that the Lord is controlled and attracted is that there's trust. The Lord trusts us that we will not use him for any purposes other than what will please him. And we, you know, the Lord can trust us. We can trust the Lord, and he can trust us. So, questions, etc.
Deshak, I wasn't able to write down exactly what you said, but something to the effect that in the spiritual world, there are some pure devotees who, and this is where I can't remember exactly what you said, something to the effect of that they still had personal desires.
Yeah, you want me to find the reference for that?
Just really explain what you meant.
Okay, let's see if I can easily find this. Okay, let's see.
Because I always kind of thought that everybody in the spiritual world was completely...
No. Trying to think. Where is this? Yes. No, it's not this verse. Sorry, just give me a second here. Oh, it's text 4. Text 3 talks of liberation. Okay, I believe it's in Bhaktivinoda Thakura's commentary to Manushiksha. Text 3, but it might be in text 4. So, I'm sorry, you'll have to give me a moment, because I want to find the very specific reference.
Usually when I think of, you know, pure devotee, you think in terms of Rupa Goswami says he defines anya vyasita sunyam gyana karna vinavitam amakuyena Krishna shima bhakti one.
Yes.
No desire.
Okay, I think it's in
anything.
Text 4. Yeah, it's in text 4. Okay, so this is where no talks of liberation. Okay, so it's in Bhaktivinoda Thakura's commentary to Manushiksha text 4, where Raghunandas Goswami says, Vyoma Nayani Lakshmi Pati Rati. He's asking to give up Rati, or attraction, affection, love, for Lakshmi Pati in Vyoma Nayanti. Lakshmi Pati is the husband of Lakshmi in Vyoma Nati, in the spiritual world, in Paravyoma. And here Bhaktivinoda Thakura talks about the four kinds of liberation other than merging, Sarupya, Samipya, Saloka, Sharsti. And Okay, here he's quoting from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1256, that these four types of liberation, and we can give the English translation, Swarupi is achieving the same features and form of Lord, as Lord Narayan. Samipya, living in Lord Narayan's close association. Salokya, residing on the same planet with the Lord. And Sharsti, obtaining the same opulences of the Lord. Just a side note, so the residents of Vaikuntha who have these types of liberation, not all of them have all of these types of liberation. So some of them may not live on the same planet as the Lord. Some of them may not be in his close association. Some of them may not have his features. Some of them may not have his opulences. Some may have some combination. Okay, so Rupa Goswami, again, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1256, says there's two varieties of these. Sukhaishvaryotara, which means prominent in personal spiritual happiness and opulence, and prema sevotara, prominent in prema towards Krishna and in his service. Out of these two, the first category is not considered suitable for those who desire loving service alone. Desire for any of the four types of mukti can have one or two main motivations. This is all quoting from Bhakti Vinod. First is Sukhaishvaryotara. For a devotee with this motivation, the devotee's individual personal happiness and pleasure arises from the grandeur and wealth of Vaikuntha. Second is Prema Sevotara. With this motivation, a strong desire to serve and please the Lord dominates more than seeking one's own pleasure. Now from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the next verse, 1257. A translation, however, one-pointed devotees of the Lord desire to experience only the sweetness of prema, and without such prema, they do not accept any type of liberation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, devotees who are attached to the loving service up to the Lord, or those who are developing such attachments, do not want liberation tainted with self-motivation to enjoy God's wealth. So they certainly reject the desire for liberation that maintains their individual happiness separate from that of the Lord's happiness. So that's that first kind of liberation. Sukha Aishvaryotama. Sukha is happiness. Aishvarya. Otara. Where it's, what's supreme is my desire to enjoy the Lord's opulences. Then the second one, which was Prema Sevotara. It says, such devotees also reject the desire for liberation that is dominated by a service attitude to please the Lord, because it also has a trace of desire for separate personal enjoyment.
So.
Then in the next verse, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1258, translation is, among all these one-pointed devotees, those whose minds have been stolen by Lord Govinda are the best. Even the favor of the Lord of Lakshmi Devi, Narayana, cannot capture their minds. I find it very significant that the Lord is referred to as Lakshmipati or Shirisha, because what's attracting the people in Vaikuntha is Lakshmi. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments on this. Therefore, those who are one-pointed consider even prema sevotara mukti unfavorable to unalloyed devotional service. Rather, they are expert in relishing the transcendental mellows of love. They prefer the sweetness of prema bhakti for the Lord in his form of Sri Govinda, motivated only by the desire to give pleasure to him. Even though the Lord may offer the varieties of liberation to them, those one-pointed devotees are not interested because Sri Govinda Dev has stolen their hearts. Thus, they are considered the topmost devotees, for even Sri Narayana, the husband of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, can never attract their minds. And then Rupa Goswami goes on to say that Krishna is superior from the point of view of rasa. So this tells us that in Vaikuntha, there are basically, in Vaikuntha but not Goloka, there are two types of devotees, both of whom still have some desire for personal enjoyment separate from that of the Lord. So one who actively desires, their main motivation is they want to enjoy the opulences of Vaikuntha. And the second is their main motivation is service, but they want to enjoy by service. There's still some desire of enjoyment by service, and it's described with this Nujwala Nilmani that even the queens of Dwarka have their love is mixed with some desire for their personal enjoyment. That Krishna is my husband, these are my children, these are my house, and so forth. The only devotee who's entirely 100% free from this is said to be Srimati Radharani. So every other devotee has this to some extent, even if it's just the tiniest fraction. And as long as the devotee is not envious of the Lord, so such devotees are also liberated. Indeed, they have one of the four kinds of liberation, and they live in the spiritual world. It's not an exploitive mentality. It's not exploitive. The difference is that in the material world, we want to desire the opulences of the Lord separate from the Lord. We are all ravanas who want to steal Sita away from Ram and enjoy Sita separately, and we want to kill Ram. We want Ram dead, and we want to become Ram. Whereas the pure devotees, they want to, you know, who are not in Goloka, they want to enjoy Sita. They want to enjoy Lakshmi. They want to enjoy Radha even, but with Krishna. With Krishna. And it's something like, you know, everyone wants to have a beautiful mother and father. And, you know, Freud said that, you know, the Oedipus complex, you want to take your mother away from your father and enjoy her yourself. That's what Freud said. And Prabhupada heard that and he was aghast. He said, I never wanted to take my mother away from my father and enjoy her. Prabhupada couldn't relate to this at all. And he said, is this true for you in the West? Are you Westerners seeking to enjoy your mother separately from your father? I mean, you really see that if your parents divorce and remarry, which my father divorced and remarried after I was an adult, when my father and stepmother were being very affectionate with each other in front of me, it felt very awkward. I didn't like it at all. You know, what's this woman doing being coochie-coo with my dad? It was really unsavory. But when children see that their mother and father are affectionate to each other, you know, when they see their mother dressed up beautifully and their father, you know, their handsome father and their beautiful mother and their parents are attracted to each other and loving each other, the children feel happy. They feel safe and secure and they feel happy. So the children enjoy that they have a beautiful mother. I liked the fact that my mother was attractive. I was proud that I had a pretty mother, a beautiful mother. I didn't want to have an ugly mother. I was, you know, but it wasn't that I wanted a beautiful mother to enjoy her beauty separately from my father enjoying her beauty. You know, I wanted my mother to be loving to my father. If my mother wasn't loving to my father, I felt very upset. If my father wasn't loving to my mother, I felt very upset. So I wanted to enjoy it, but I wanted to enjoy it as part of their relationship with each other, not separately. You know, this is a mundane example, and obviously it's not pure, but the principle is still there, that the children of the Lord, right, those in Vaikuntha, they see them, the Lakshmi and Narayan, as their mother and father or their master and mistress. So they want to enjoy the opulence of Lakshmi. They do. But in relationship to Narayan, not stealing her from Narayan. But still, they're not only concerned about the pleasure of Narayana. So you have those in Vaikuntha who are in Shantaras. They're not in Dasyaras. They're in Shantaras. They're not really getting pleasure from service. They're getting pleasure from being there. I'm in the abode of the Lord, enjoying the opulences of the Lord. And they're not really looking for happiness in active service. Then there are those who are in Vaikuntha, who are liberated in Vaikuntha, who are in Dasyaras. And they are looking for happiness through service to the Lord, but they still want to enjoy the opulences of the Lord. And you go higher and higher to Ayodhya, to Dwaraka, to Mathura, to Vrindavan, where the mood of service and love becomes so much more prominent that there's really no trace at all, then, practically speaking, of thinking about my own happiness. But for all of those devotees, there's no envy. There's no exploitation. So that is the difference. Oh, so now my mic is too high. Usually you guys are telling me that it's not high enough. Okay, now you guys are saying that it's too high. Hard to get this right. Okay, I've just moved it away. So hopefully that'll solve the problem. Is that clear, Prabhu?
That was fascinating. A little too close to the mic.
It was where I have it all the time, but I don't know. Technology's funny, so I've just moved it away. So anybody else? Some more questions or comments?
Hare Krishna, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, yes.
I was just wondering, you mentioned that we're valuable to Krishna, and I believe that. But I was wondering if you had a scriptural reference that we could use for preaching.
Well, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is very anxious to get us back. I mean, Srila Prabhupada says, if you're going to count Prabhupada's words as a scriptural reference, that the Lord is more anxious to have us come back home than we are to go. And that we take one step towards Krishna, and Krishna will take 10 steps to him. So if the words of Prabhupada are sufficient as a scriptural reference, it's there. Also, if you want to take in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna
does he use the word valuable?
Well, why would Krishna want us back more than we want to go by 10 times if he didn't care, if we weren't important?
Okay.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense, does it? If you're not important to me, if you have no value to me, why would I want you?
If from a materialist point of view, now I'm talking about preaching here, not convincing me, but preaching. A famous person just wants a whole gang of fans and doesn't care about them. Okay.
That's not an isolation. So, if you take any of the aspects of love in isolation, as I said earlier, you know, that to be fascinated by someone, to find them attractive, to value them, and to be there for them. So, all of those. And Krishna says, Suridam Sarvabhutanam. I am the friend of all living entities. What does it mean to be a friend? What does that mean? If I say to you, I am your friend, but I don't value you, does that make any sense? Do you have any friends who you don't value?
No.
It's impossible. It's absolutely impossible. You can't. They're, it's incompatible. If you die tomorrow, and you know someone tells me Maharani died, and I say, oh, who cares?
I'm thinking of preaching now.
You have Suridam in the Bhagavad Gita, Suridam Sarvabhutanam.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna says, I am the friend of all living entities. If he's the friend, he must value us.
Okay.
It doesn't mean anything otherwise. If I said that to you, if I said, Maharani, I'm your friend, but I don't care if you live or die. I don't care if I ever see you. You have no value to me. You have no importance in my life. You say, well, what kind of a friend is that? In what way are you my friend? It's an integral part of friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And Krishna says, you know, I envy no one nor am I partial to anyone, but everyone is in me and they are mine. And Krishna also says this in his description 4:35, that when one is seeing the truth, one knows that everyone is in me and they are mine. Well, if they're mine, if they're my possessions, don't you value that?
Well, like I said, if you're preaching, it's a hard point to...
Isn't that clear? If you say to someone something that you say is mine, isn't it yours because you attach some value to it?
Well, like the example that I just gave, a famous person doesn't necessarily care about all their fans, even though the fans, each and every one, care about the famous person.
No, but they still think they're important.
In a impersonal way, though.
But then they wouldn't say that they're their friends.
Yeah, so that's why...
So you have to put those together. You know, you have to put together, Krishna's saying, all the living entities are mine, and I am their friend.
Yeah.
So someone who's mine, anything that's mine, again, I must value in some way. Now, a famous person could value their followers for their own ego. They still value them. You know, the famous persons are still counting the number of views that they get.
Right.
How many people read my Twitter posts or my blog? They're still counting, and they value every number. It's important to them, the 1,300,072nd person who views their movie. Each of those numbers are important to them. It's important to them for their ego, but it is important to them.
Knows, each one of us, like you were saying, as a friend.
Yes.
And they see each one as just a number.
Right, but it's still, but there's still, you're talking about value. Again, value isn't in isolation. So you want to say, are we important to God? Yes, we are important to God. We are his possessions. We are his. So we have value in the same way that every one of my possessions has some value to me. If it didn't, I would throw it away or give it away.
Mm-hmm.
So everything I own, I've attached that. I own it because I attach some value to it. And then anyone that I'd call a friend, so going beyond that, anyone I would call a friend, there's no meaning to friendship without feeling that that person has some value or importance to me. It's a meaningless statement otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Yes. Every time you answer a question for me, it just really boosts my preaching.
Okay, very good. And Krishna's eagerness for us to return home is shown in his, in all of these incarnations coming to bring us home. If he didn't care, why would he come?
I know that. That's another point that's hard to preach on, though.
But I don't understand why. Why would I go to some nasty place to get somebody if I didn't care about them? Again, in normal life, you know, this is like, say, in the military, you know, your buddy has been shot and they're behind enemy lines and you've got to run under gunfire to rescue them and get them in the evac helicopter. And then you get some Medal of Honor from the president. So how does it show that you value? You're willing to go into a dangerous, nasty, horrible place in order to rescue them.
But it's not dangerous for Krishna.
Well, it's certainly not pleasant on one level. As soon as Krishna comes, the demons are trying to kill him.
He likes that.
Well, all right, fine. So the soldier may also get some enjoyment out of being the great hero on the battlefield.
Yeah.
Like we read earlier in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada explains that the material world doesn't have to exist even for the Lord's Leela. That the Lord can experience all varieties of lila and all varieties of tastes without having the existence of a material world. So it's not that the Lord requires, yes, he gets pleasure in all circumstances, that's his nature. Still, he's coming to a place where people are insulting him, trying to kill him, where people are envious of him. Why? Because you know, Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya to Duskritam, he's coming here for us. And even for the Duskritam, even for the envious, as Lord Chaitanya particularly, he's preaching even to the envious as Lord Nityananda. Why? Because he values us. Because it matters to him. He values us, frankly, more than we value ourselves. You know, we may be making decisions on a daily or moment-by-moment basis that are not in our best interest, that are not really valuing our life and our time and ourselves. We may be wasting our life, more or less. Durlabha manasa janma. You know, we may be taking this human life for granted, and instead of going to a kirtan or watching a football game or whatever, is our time waster. Gossip or whatever it may be. So we may not give value to ourselves. As Prabhupada says, the demons envy their own self. They hate their own spiritual nature. But Krishna is willing to go through so much trouble. And he sends his devotees who are also willing to go through so much trouble. They may become crucified for us. They may become beaten in the marketplaces for us. Krishna is vilified and attacked over and over and over again when he incarnates in the material world. In practically every incarnation, there's somebody or some group of people, even as Lord Chaitanya, you know, the Mayavadis were criticizing him, his own students were criticizing him.
I agree. I'm just thinking, you know, when you're out distributing books, it's hard for me to get into different incarnations because that's like a real...
Well, then just say Sarvam Sarvabhutanam. Krishna claims that he's our friend. I mean, another thing you can see, you know, if you're talking about being out distributing books, I don't think you're looking for a scriptural evidence anyway.
Well,
I mean, when you're out in the West,
be authoritative if in case I have to.
Oh yeah, okay. But when you're out in the West distributing books, unless you run across some, you know, Vedic scholar, most people don't even know what the Shastras are. They're not going to care for evidence in the Shastras or evidence in Prabhupada. They don't even know what that is. So I like the argument given, interestingly enough, by the British writer Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote all the Sherlock Holmes books. And in one of the Sherlock Holmes stories, Sherlock Holmes says to Watson, "Just consider the flowers, Watson." He said, "The greatest evidence for the fact that God is good and that he cares about us is that there are flowers." He says, when somebody loves you, they give beyond your necessities. And nobody needs flowers. So all of the plants in the world could easily be pollinated in other ways. In fact, there are many plants that get pollinated and reproduce without flowers that have scents and colors. So flowers with scents and colors are not necessary for the reproduction of plants. They're not necessary for food. And yet the world is full of flowers.
I actually use that line from the Bhagavatam, that the flowers are Krishna's sense of artistry.
That's
and the birds.
Birds
are Krishna's sense of imagination.
The birds are Krishna's sense of artistry.
Oh, okay.
So
the flowers are...
I think it's his smile. I have to look it up. But the fact is that we have so much around us that is far beyond necessity. You give these examples all the time. We have so many varieties of fruits and varieties of vegetables and varieties of grains. We don't just have rice. We have rice and wheat and barley and rye. We have apples and oranges and tangerines and grapefruits and pomelos. Right? We have mangoes and papayas, and we have so many varieties. Do we need all those varieties of fruits? No. We don't need all those varieties. There's many people in the world who live in poverty, who eat a diet with very little variety. So it's not a necessity. And then there's kinds of kinds. There's so many kinds of apples and so many kinds of bananas. You know, in our modern demoniac society, they often go for one kind. I think that the Cavendish banana is the main kind of banana you buy in the world, and now it's being attacked by some kind of disease, plant disease. And the banana growers are all frantic. And I'm thinking, you know, here in Hawaii, I love to get the sweet Williams banana, and then there's the apple banana, and there's so many kinds of bananas. So kinds of kinds. We don't need that. We don't need so many kinds of kinds. Do we need the beauty of a sunset? Is that something we need? We don't need that. So someone who's providing things beyond what we need, that shows that we're valued. You know, I give the example all the time that in the governments of the world, in the prisons, they don't provide beyond the needs. At least not in the maximum or medium security prisons. Maybe in the minimum ones for the rich white-collar criminals, they give them, you know, ping-pong tables and televisions. But at least in the maximum security, they don't. They don't give them flowers. You know, you never hear of such a thing. The prisoners have roses and carnations and gardenias. And they don't give them much variety in their diet. They don't give them variety in their clothing. They don't give them decorations in the prison cells. Just the bare necessities to sustain life. Absolute bare necessities. Why? Because the prisoners aren't valued. They're not valuable members of society. They're not making a positive contribution to society. They're taking from society. Instead of working an honest job, they're just taking someone else's wealth. They're taking someone else's life, taking someone else's body. They're just takers. They're not givers. My youngest son likes to say that if you raise good children, then you're giving a huge amount of wealth to society. Whatever you invest in raising good children is a huge give back to society. So people who are takers, they don't have value in society. Practically speaking, they don't. So therefore, they're given just the bare necessities of life. The fact that we're given more than that. I mean, obviously, some people have really bad karma and they don't even get the bare necessities of life. But we're given so much more than that. So much more. I mean, just millions and millions of times more than what we absolutely need to live. That's evidence that we're valued. That the Lord sees this jiva, this living being, has some value, some importance. So that's just, you know, as far as people in general, you want to give examples based on just natural experience and logic. They're not going to take the Shastra as authoritative or Srila Prabhupada as authoritative for the general public in the West. And if you're talking to Indians, you can quote from the Bhagavad Gita or someone familiar with the Bhagavad Gita. Is that all right?
Yes, thank you very much. You've given me some inspiration.
Can I ask a question?
Of course.
Okay. I really like the imposter syndrome that you brought up. Any sort of self-interest, it really works well. I was just Googling online and I was looking at some of this stuff, and it's something you could use in preaching. I was wanting to know the title of the book you mentioned about cheating culture.
Uh-huh.
One of the four defects. Yeah. The cheating propensity.
Yeah, this is. I'll warn you that reading this book is heavy. It's called The Cheating Culture. It's by David Callahan, Callahan. And it may have a. It's published by Harcourt. And
yeah.
I have a copyright 2004. There may be a later edition. And I remember after the first time I read this book, it was a required book in a graduate course, I came to my professor and I said, listen, I need to tell you that I've witnessed some of the students cheating on an exam and I hadn't told you before. And after reading this book, I really feel that I need to tell you. And he laughed and laughed. And he said, every single one of my students comes to me with a confession after reading this book. It was just so arresting. And one of the main reasons I've decided to read it again is that in working on Manashiksha, Raghunath Das Goswami speaks a lot about deceit, pretense, and hypocrisy, and knowing the way this book affected me the first time that I read it, I wanted to reread it as a way of, you know, really looking deep within to face my own deceit and pretense and so forth, which is absolutely required in spiritual life. But yeah, the whole tendency that our ultimate cheating is we're pretending to be something that we're not. And we're all aware of this on some existential level. In fact, I'd say it's our main cause of anxiety is not so much even death, but that we're going to be found out as imposters. You know, that somebody is going to find out that, wait a minute, you know, you appear to be this and this and this, but really you're just nothing. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.